Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
And finally, in markets this evening, I've got Kia Nanyana. He is a Scope Prime. Kia, appreciate the time. I want to kick off with Sasol. Morgan Stanley yesterday came out, said it's worth 225 Rand a share. The MoneyWeb headline today was, is Sasol a screaming buy? So far, markets disagreeing. Where do you sit on the Sasol fence?
You know, Sai, I have quite an affinity to Sasol, and I think I hold it very close to my heart. I think over the years, we've spoken about Sasol so many times. Yeah. And I think it's this dislocation in valuation that is just rocking everyone. But I think it's there for a reason, and I think it has to do with the fact that what they have to get right internally, they haven't gotten right. And you're looking at just production metrics, which have been on a steady decline. Mm. And what they have not done very well is being able to control cost as well as their competitors offshore. And I think that's what's led to this dislocation. You know, in about September, I was looking at a consensus analyst average for the share price, yeah, and it was sitting at about 226.50. And for Morgan Stanley to say it's at 225, I think analysts have not gotten it wrong. It is what the management have gotten wrong in viewing this dislocation in valuation.
I take your point. There's an article in Business Day today saying a UK study found Sasol what well-placed to drive SA's green hydrogen sector. The assets that they have are real. To your point, it is a management story, and it often is. But it is, right now, it's management, and that's what's holding it back.
You know, I recall a story when Sasol got under the 30 Rand mark during COVID. Mm. And I remember a client having bought a sizable portion of Sasol at about 27 odd bucks. And it had gotten to a valuation of over 200 Rand in that interim between 2020 and 2022. And it's that question that I sit with on a daily basis. Is Sasol too big to fail? Mm-hmm. And is Sasol cheap enough to take in right now? As we're saying, it's up about 5% on the trading day, but we've seen a lot of pain in the share price, even in the preceding few days.
Yeah, I take your point. And the valuation's there, but I suppose also it's the point is, when will the market start to reward it for changing a queue? We had the NVIDIA CEO doing the keynote at CES, Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, earlier in the week. Stock jumped to all-time highs, back around $140 at the moment. The US, of course, closed today for Memorial Day for President Carter. Can this have another awesome year? Because I got to say, I listened to that keynote, and it leaves you just full of like awesomeness. I mean, the man just for 90 minutes blows you away with tech and predictions and the like. Is there still NVIDIA hope for that one? I mean, it's not doing poorly, but can it do another rocking year?
I think it can, and essentially I take it back home and I look at our competition regulation here, and if we hold 60% of any market, they call it market dominance.
Yeah.
And just looking at the GPU market for NVIDIA, they hold about 85% of that market share. And truly speaking, if we had to compare it to its competitors, I think the competitors are still in development phase when NVIDIA actually has a product they're taking to market. And given that competitive advantage that they have in being almost the first to market, it wouldn't really boggle the mind for it to do well. I was doing an interesting calculation on the compounded annual growth rate, and it was about 68% for the past 3 years. And if we had to look at the revenue of NVIDIA 3 years ago, it was sitting at about $28 billion for the year. In the current year, they're almost coming close to $200 billion in revenue in the space of 3 years. So if that had to continue at a compounded annual growth rate of 68%, in about 2028, we'd expect that NVIDIA, if it had to carry on at this current rate, will have revenue closer to $700 billion a year.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering, but I take your point. I mean, their competitors are, you know, developing things that they've already made and frankly are moving on. I mean, his keynote was all full of driving autonomous cars and chips for that, aside from that small little desktop computer that I want but have no need for. I want to go back to Sasol in a way, in a sense. Brent oil, we're seeing that slowly creeping high. It's kind of been a slow trickle. Yeah, it it was what, back in mid-October, and sort of edging ever so higher since then. Now sort of 76, 77. I mean, should we be concerned? Because if oil starts to really run, then all inflation bets are off the table.
I think this is a barometer of where we think growth is going to come from. And I think the US being the number one oil consumer in the world, looking to stack up on their inventories, if we're looking at weekly inventories having increased there, it does tell you that the US is still consuming a lot of oil. But conversely, what I like looking at is essentially the derivatives markets, because I really do believe it tells you a lot what's happening in the spot market. And right now, looking at the 1 to 6 month contract, the premium has increased, which really is indicative of just one thing, that supply is tightening while demand is increasing. So in the inflationary environment, you'd expect it to kick into inflation. But I think it stands good for Brent crude and US crude that you would believe that the price would be going up in the first 6 months of the year.
And if demand is increasing, that's good for global economy, because, I mean, the demand means that there's economic activity happening. So that's not the worst thing in the world either.
I think so too. And the two places that you're looking towards is the US and China. And I think for me at the moment, it's the road to the 20th of December and how far would these trade tariffs are going to affect the global economy. And right now, I think the Chinese story has to do with consumer consumption. And if it's going to be consumption-led economic growth in China, I think it also bodes very well for the Brent crude price, as they are going to be increasing inventories as well on the other side of the planet. So I really think right now the economy is sitting at a precipice, looking at what's going to happen in the Trump presidency.
You kicked that China door open, so let's go there for a second. 24 September was the giant stimulus. We were in a holiday, public holiday, of course, but a lot of what we saw in the Chinese and Hong Kong markets has reversed since then. Are you in the China bull camp? Are you in the China uninvestable camp? Where do you sit on China?
I think the shift to a more aggressive monetary and fiscal easing at last month's Politburo meeting and, you know, subsequent economic workforce has improved expectations. And I really have been a person who has really looked at China as being really an example on how the government at the central point can direct economic investment. And essentially right now, with the monetary and fiscal easing, it really bodes well for the Chinese stock market and the Chinese economy. I mean, in recent days, the Chinese authority on the stock market has spoken to big institutional investors to stop shorting the market. I mean, in which stock market can a regulator come out straight up to pension funds and hedge funds and say, you know what, we do not believe that you should be shorting stocks, and we want to bolster the stock market. I really think it speaks to an economy which really is geared for some growth this year.
Yeah, I take your point. It is a weird economy, but it's giant and important. And of course, if China starts to boom, then we really score, because they'll take some of our commodities. But we'll leave it there. Ken and Yana, he's a Scope Prime. Appreciate the time.
Business on Heart 1027 with MoneyWeb.